Let's get back to the glory of God. Now, last week, I started into something that the Lord showed me, and it was back previous to Psalms 50:15, which had to do with, he actually got my eyes off of myself. We'll go back to Isaiah 14, 12 to 14 for just a minute. I still think that humility is a key to understanding and knowing God. I don't understand how it's all connected. I don't understand the shape of the key or where the lock's at even, but I do know that that's part of it. It's a major part of it. And it says in 12 to 14, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into the heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High." Now, I got thinking back years and years ago about what God has done, how he organized the whole thing. For me, something has to make sense. You say, well, what are you talking about? It has to make sense for the Creator to die for his creation. That drove me crazy for a long, long time. I see a clock, you know, when I'm a kid. I want to know what makes that thing tick. How does that thing work? You get it apart, and then you realize, I can get it apart, I just can't put it back together. I bet you the scientists have the same problem with things like atoms and DNA and all the rest of that stuff, too. I can get it apart, I just can't figure out how to put it back together. Anyway, things have to make sense to me. And when I start seeing these things here about Lucifer falling from heaven, I realize that before Lucifer fell, obviously there was something that was different. And when I say different, I mean God had to change things in heaven for Lucifer to fall. They couldn't be just the same. And it says a third of the angels basically fell with him at the same time. What happened? You think all of a sudden God just let the prisoner out of jail? You think he just unleashed the cage for the roaring lion who was starving to death and he just went on the attack? No, something a whole lot more subtle than that happened. What actually began to happen at the very, very beginning of the fall of God's creation was their attention just simply turned to themselves. That was all. And I mean just so subtle you wouldn't believe it. Satan, instead of thinking about God and having his mind stayed on thee, his mind turned toward himself. That was all that happened. And from there, a chain of events took place. He started thinking of, how do I feel? How do you feel? Somebody says, how you feeling? I like them to ask me that, but they don't like me to tell them. How do I feel? That's the first thing Satan thought of. You know what the angels were thinking of when Satan started thinking, how do I feel? They were thinking, how does he feel? What you going to do next, God? I wonder how I feel. Well, how do I feel? Well, this morning I got a little bit of pain in my back. I got this, I got that problem, I got the other problem. Do you realize how much of this stuff is exactly what we experience on a daily basis? What do you think caused Eve to take that first bite? Where did it start? Her attention off of God and on herself. You want to know how man falls? That's it. And it's just that subtle. It's what do I like? How do I feel? What do I want? You can't get to what you want before you start thinking about how you feel. You got to go through this progression. And then, what do I need? Now, here's about 20 of them. And I guarantee you, if you're anything at all like I am, some of these things are going to hit home to you, if not all of them. What do I do to get it? Who's holding me back? How am I being treated? Who's in my way? How unfair my life is? What I deserve? How much I do? How hard I work? How unappreciated I am? How much I've sacrificed? How much I've given? How right I am? You don't think you're right all the time, do you? You know that's impossible, don't you? Doesn't stop you from feeling that way and thinking that way, though. What people expect me to do. How stupid everybody else is. You know you think that. How lazy everybody else is. You say, oh, I never thought like that. You know the common denominator there is, don't you? It's just about you. Now, are some of those things somewhat, quote unquote, justified? You bet they are. I mean, have you ever been mistreated? Sure. Have you ever been expected to do stuff and people putting you in a position to do stuff you didn't want to do? Is there other people gotten in your way? Have people treated you unfairly? Yep. That doesn't justify your attention on yourself. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. As long as you're focused on yourself, you're going to have a miserable life, because nothing is going to satisfy you to the point where you quit thinking about yourself. And no matter how much you get, all that's going to happen is you're going to want more. You are trying to fill a bottomless pit. You know that? Mankind has never satisfied himself with enough of anything. That's a fact. You think winning the lottery will fix you? No, it won't. I mean, you take guys that have made all that money. How is their life perfect? Not even close. Not even close. We are not made to serve ourselves. We are not made for our benefit. And as long as you keep trying to make that round peg fit in a square hole, it's never going to fit and it's never going to be comfortable. That's the problem. Now, God turned all that stuff off for me for a while. It really happened. He turned off my attention toward myself. Now, that's a weird feeling, I can tell you that. Other than just tell you about it, I can't make you feel what I felt. But all the fun things in my life absolutely lost meaning completely. It would be like you lost all your taste buds and your sense of smell, and then you eat something, and it's just like so much stuff in your mouth. It wouldn't matter what you're eating because you couldn't taste it or smell it. It's just stuff. He just turned it off. I mean, I used to enjoy looking out there at that lake. I love the water, man. I just love it. I don't know why I'm attracted to it like that. I'm not attracted to fire like that at all, but I'm attracted to the water. Maybe it was being born and raised out there in a burned up desert type area. But I just love the water. I love green, man. All of a sudden, it meant nothing. Food meant nothing. I didn't care if I ate, didn't eat. House meant nothing. My kids were just neutral. The only things that I responded to was other people responding to her. And that stuff would reach me. That was the only thing left. You said, well, didn't you pray about that situation? People, when you get done praying for several hours about one thing, there ain't nothing left to say. You think you're going to be heard for your much speaking? You think it's going to be because you're not asking the right way, because you're not saying the right things? You can say everything that there is to say and nothing changes. Pretty soon, you just burned out. There ain't nothing left. Now, God put me in a position where I meant nothing, and all these things lost attraction for me. I wasn't even part of the equation anymore. And it stayed that way for a substantial period of time. Say, did you get back there? Oh, yeah, man. We're going to look at some more of these people in the Bible, how they were there at one time, and then they lost sight of that stuff too. This thing is so fragile and so subtle, your attention will be turned back on yourself. And the only thing you're going to notice, if you ever do have that true sense of warmth with God, where you're just dwelling with him constantly, hour after hour, day after day, and you wake up in the middle of the night, your first thoughts are of him, and you wake up in the morning, your first thoughts are of him, and it's just pure joy the whole time. What'll happen is all of a sudden you'll, I don't feel like I used to feel. It's just that subtle. You won't even know it's gone. And what you'll realize is your thoughts and your attentions are back on what I have to do, where I have to go, who I have to call, what I have to pay, what I have to clean, all of that stuff. That's what's going to be about. You're going to find out your attention is no longer on him. You wonder why you don't have peace? Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee. When you find yourself without peace, it's because your attention's on yourself.
You say, I can't get it back on God. Well, I gotta figure out a way that I got it.
I gotta. See how that works? I mean, this thing is subtle. You want to know how to get your attention focused back on God? I'll tell you. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. You just start thinking about what he has done, what he has made. You stop thinking about where I have to go and what I have to do, and you quit trying to figure out a way so that I can keep my mind stayed on him. You just stop thinking about yourself, and you just start thinking about him. You start thinking about the future and the streets of gold and why he built that city four square, 1,500 miles, why he's got it up above the earth, when he wipes away all tears, what's that going to be like? When you see him for the first time and everybody looks around and nobody's looking at each other, they're all looking at the one that made them. You start thinking about that stuff, man, all of a sudden it's going to be, hey, it's back. That's what it's like. And it's just that quick. Next thing you know, you're going to be distracted. Sad, but that's the way it goes. Anyway, the problem's in 2 Timothy 3. Stick with me here a few minutes. We're going to tie some things together. 2 Timothy 3. I read 2 Timothy 3:16. All scripture is given by inspiration of God, profitable for doctrine, reproof, correction, instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be perfect, thoroughly furnished unto all good works. Look back up the first part of that chapter. This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. How are they going to come, God? For men shall be lovers of them own selves. Now you look at how many of these things are focused on self. Covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying the power thereof. Now, how much of that is about self?
Everyone.
Every single one of them. What did he say at the beginning? He said, in the last days, perilous times shall come, for men shall be lovers of their own selves. You want to know what the problem is? There's the problem right there. And you realize that he says that's the last days. How many of you think we're living in the last days? Let me see some hands.
Amen.
You think you're living in the last days? Some people say, I don't know.
Has this been going on for everyone?
Yes, it has. Why do you think he said it like that, though? He contrasts it to everything in the past. It's going to be worse during that period of time than it ever was before. You say, well, it's not like it never happened before. No, but it's like a little bit of salt on your food. All of a sudden now it's so salty you can't eat it. Yeah. It's just more of the same stuff. In the last days, men should be lovers of themselves. You know why the greatest generation, they call them back there in World War II, went off and did what they did? Because they weren't thinking of themselves. That's why. Last days, knowledge shall be increased. You believe that? You think you're living the last days? Whether you think it or not, it can happen in a moment. Anyway, everything is different. If you start looking at this stuff and figure out what you think and how you function in life, you're going to find out that almost everything you do passes through the eye test. And I'm not talking about those eyes. How it affects me, what I think, how I feel, what the results are going to be, what's it going to cost me, what do I have to do? That's it. You say, well, what else are you supposed to think about? You're made for God's benefit. When do you start thinking about, man, God, here's this problem. Well, how do you benefit through this? How do I respond the right way through this? So that when this is all done, you benefit more by creating me. Instead of me just making you more long-suffering and causing you more grief. Crying and whining. Why? I want it. I'm hurting. gimme, God. What? Give me relief to start with, and then give me more of the good stuff. Take away the bad. Give me the good. That's all I want. Nothing else. What do you want? I want my way. God said, you ain't made for your way. Don't you realize that if you got your way the whole time, you'd end up just a spoiled brat, not worth even making? And not only that, you'd never be happy, just like every spoiled kid on this earth is never happy, because they can't get enough to make them happy. You were not made to be self-serving. Neither was Satan. He messed up big time. And there's our problem. Anyway, we're going to look at some connections between past and present here. Go back to Matthew chapter 7. Some of you may think this is a little bit of a stretch, but it's not a stretch at all. Matthew chapter 7, verse 16 to 27. A little bit of a read. You shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but every corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. Not every one that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say unto me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name? And in thy name have we cast out devils, and in thy name have we done many wonderful works. You think that goes on? Man, these people focused on that stuff. They're working at it. Then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. Do you see what that verse just said? He says, therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house on a rock. You're right back into the mess. You think that's talking about somebody else, but it isn't. So what's he say? And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon the house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And every one that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. Now, lost people point to their works. That's what they do, especially the religious lost. They really point to their works. But even the lost that don't go to church, you know what they think? God's going to weigh my good deeds against my bad deeds, and if I got more good ones than bad ones, then I get in. Where'd you hear that? My grandmammy told me that. And you know how good she was. Yeah, right. They trust in that stuff. I mean, they're really hanging on to it. Let's get back over here into something else. Revelation chapter 3. We've read this before. Whosoever heareth these words, Revelation 3, 13 to 17. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. And to the angel of the church of Laodicea write, these things saith the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would thou wert cold or hot. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Because thou sayest, I am rich, and I am increased with goods, and I have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art poor, wretched, miserable, blind, and naked. What's the Laodicean church's problem? What is it? They're focused on themselves. They're all about themselves. It's about what I'm doing, how I feel, what I've got. In the last days, perilous time shall come because they shall be lovers of their own selves. The last church age, Laodicean church age, focused on the same thing. You want to know what's wrong with Christianity today? It's those prophecies. It's God's fault. He wrote the stuff down. He wrote it down. It says, it is needful that offenses come, but woe unto the man by whom they come. Somebody had to deliver Jesus up, but it didn't have to be Pilate. You know what would have happened if Pilate had released him? Somebody else would have nailed him. Now, we're living in the Laodicean church age, but it don't have to be us. You say, why is that? Because God will deal with you. If you want knowledge, if you begin to pray, God, help me to understand you better. Help me to know you better. Help me to glory in the fact that I understand and know you. He'll start to show you some things about himself. The minute your attention turns back toward yourself, he just turns it off. You say, man, Lord, I don't feel the same as I used to. I want to feel that feeling again, God. You can't get it that way. There's only one way to get it. And that is, mine stayed on thee. That's the only way it works. You know when God's really ministered to you, when you start singing them songs and that thing gets real, you're not thinking about your feelings. You're not thinking about anything about yourself. You're thinking about him and what he did and who he is. That's when it gets real. Now, that's what you were created for. You were actually made to enjoy fellowship with God. That's why he made you. For his pleasure, for his benefit. The great part of it is he made it a mutual arrangement. It's not just about him, but when we are all about him, then he's all about us. It's like a husband and wife so much in love that they try to outdo each other in doing stuff for each other and they never think about themselves. It's like that. And when you stop and think about it, if you have all the riches and glory and he's got all riches and glory and you guys try to outdo each other with them things, you say, what's that going to be like? Well, in his presence is fullness of joy, and at his right hand is pleasure forevermore. And it's going to be something so great, you just can't even imagine how good it's going to be. That's what it'll be. Anyway, we'll move into this thing next week, and we'll look at how this thing ties back into today. And the thing is so subtle and it's so simple that it's nearly impossible to realize how you got away from God. I'll bet you Adam and Eve didn't even get it. I'll bet you David didn't understand it until later on in his life. Take any one of them. Moses messed up big time. God killed him for it. He begged God to let him go into Canaan. No, no, you're going to die. How come? Simple thing. Just start thinking about yourself. Well, for the next few minutes, let's try to quit thinking about us and just think about him. Let's close in prayer.